Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looking to expand or move your company? Look no further than Ohio. With a talented workforce for in-demand industries like tech, healthcare, engineering, manufacturing, and more, you can staff up and scale for growth. Ohio's central location and reliable infrastructure will help you impress your customers, while Ohio's affordable cost of living and quality of life will excite your employees. Why survive somewhere else when your business can thrive in Ohio? Visit successinohio.com today.
Dad Bod Rap Pod, we're back. It's 127 degrees in San Jose today. I am wearing a mesh Jamaican tank top for those who are not on Zoom. My name is Damone Carter, aka Dim One. I am joined on the world's most annoying conference call platform with Mr. Nate LeBlanc. How's it going?
What's up, guys? I've been talking about this with my wife all week. I say a button up. Short sleeve is cooler than a t-shirt. Love to hear your thoughts on that.
Cooler than a t-shirt. I feel like
there's more breezeways. There's more
vents. Cooler. Cooler. I was like, just is this a direct temperature shot at purposes. Dave? Or, like, I know. You taking shots because Dave's not in the room? Or
we're all living that no AC apartment life right now. So you have to like be strategic with your windows, your window coverings, and your shirts.
That's right. For those who can't see us on Zoom, Nate has like a white linen flowy thing like Puffy wore in I believe it was the 112 video. Yeah. And we're joined by Mr. Nothing's Cooler Than a T-Shirt, Dave Ma. How's it going?
Hey guys, good to be here. I'm going okay. Hot as fuck, dude. I'm a little distracted by your shoulders though, Damone.
Thank you. The lack of definition is really startling.
They look moisturized.
Always, my man. Health and beauty tips at the end of the show. But we are back another episode this week. There's a lot of like just weird shit going on, definitely in the world in general, but in the world of rap, there's weird shit going on. Nate was the first to hit me to this. I believe we had a call on Saturday, and he said something Doja Cat, and I didn't wrap my mind around the full.
I had one of those things where I couldn't, on Twitter, I couldn't get to find the actual thing she did. I just could see all the memes, jokes, rants, cancellation posts. I could never actually find out what she did. I feel like I have a pretty good grasp on what she did now.
Don't watch it. It's bad. It's pretty bad. I've been on this program and made the case for lightly Doja Cat and also Azealia Banks. And they are both horrible this weekend, man.
problematic.
Yeah, super problematic. But Doja Cat is like tangentially a rapper, so we won't stay there too long. Azealia Banks saying that she screwed Dave Chappelle.
Right.
I need that album. I want that. I want that hip house endeavor.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. That was a pretty crazy clip of her saying that.
I
didn't watch it. Is it like the Questlove scene when it's like Dave Chappelle has an Asian wife. It's the Tupac skit from Chappelle's show.
Oh man.
Oh, I wish it was that good. No, right. it's just super cringy.
She looks out of it on the video.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a terrible look for just everybody. Everybody, yeah.
Humanity in general. yeah, I mean, folks have been cooped up for a long time. I get it. You know, Doja Cat's in like KKK chat rooms and shit, doing shit. Azealia Banks is claiming to screw Dave Chappelle, which is a weird flex. I just feel like that.
Well, he is rich and he's very buff now. Congratulations.
Yeah.
She just got the DVDs, or
she was too young. That's true. As a quick tangent here, I'd love to get you guys' thoughts on this. Is there a correlation between muscular definition and not being funny? Going back to my shoulders.
You're hilarious, Damon. Yeah,
exactly. Oh man,
it's hard to be hilarious. Buff and funny. John Cena, maybe. The Rock. Kind of about to,
oh, okay, okay.
Are we naming our top five comedians?
Yeah,
I'm
like,
I'm saying, can you be funny and buff at the same time? Arnold Schwarzenegger totally. Was funny in his prime.
That's
you
true.
Ever seen Pumping Iron? He's destroying that dude.
That's true. He is hilarious.
Not intentionally funny. I mean,
doing an elaborate put on, dude. He's toying with Lou Ferrigno. I think it's very intentional.
Really.
Yeah, totally.
It definitely is.
It's a long con in a way that I find hilarious.
Yeah,
really.
He's in character and he breaks him down mentally slowly. It's definitely a put on.
Twins, okay. Kindergarten Cop. Yeah, it's tough to be buff and funny, but
you're claiming the Schwarzenegger comedy legacy right here. Okay.
I'm saying Twins, Schwarzenegger is funny. I think he knows that he's ridiculous and therefore he's funny.
Mm-hmm. Also an ex-governor, just to kind
that
of...
That part not as funny. That was very demoralizing for the state of California.
That was his greatest joke.
Yo! Dave Ma, still warm, limber right now, shooting from three. So, you know, kind of gossipy shit aside, this is the Dad Bod Rap Pod. We talk about really heavy topics like Ludacris last week. I want to circle back on this. Because Dave, you noted in your lukewarm defense of Ludacris as an MC that he was on the Punk'd episode where he was rapping over like absolute garbage.
Totally.
And he did it. And somebody tweeted about that. I was like, are they listening to the show? Probably.
Oh, interesting.
It did make me think Luda is also the guy who didn't have the good sense to be like, that shit sounds like pots and pans, bro. I was like, that's a great comment for Ludacris, and also kind of bad. But
did you watch it? Did you actually watch the clip?
I remember seeing that and feeling like it wasn't, the beat could have been worse. It could have been like
right.
Only, like, I've heard worse at some of these sessions.
Totally.
I've rapped on worse. I feel like only the beats on Insecure are like the ones that really capture what a terrible beat sounds like. Like when this season, but when she had the producer dude on there and they would play this like canned beats.
Right, right.
I was like, that's perfect television show bad beat music. It's like its own genre. So shout out to
they can't use samples or anything. They have to use like the canned sounds that come with the machine.
Right. Right. So it's kind of plingy, although I'm sure Luda would destroy that. that was our inaugural episode or inaugural segment of Overrated, Underrated. We are back this week to parse over the careers of rap legends and decide whether they are overrated or underrated. To review for those of you who might have missed last week, we're going to go through, each of us is going to pick a rapper. We're going to have to choose either over or underrated. There's no kind of in between. There's no properly rated. There's only hyperbole here on the Dad Bod Rap Pod. So, Dave Ma, why don't you kick it off? Who is your overrated, underrated rapper of this week?
Okay, well, my pick this week is going to be producer Ant Banks, who I think is underrated. I mean, in many ways, he's kind of like the West Coast Manny Fresh, where dude crafted a sound for 10 years and more before anybody even took notice. I mean, hit the list of people he's worked with, as you guys know, is ridiculous. E-40, Spice One, a million other people, I mean, from the area. And he also made a name for himself by straight slanging tapes out of his trunk, you know? Sure. I guess the one setback is that you've heard one Ant Banks beat, you've heard them all. But yeah, I think he's vastly underrated. Okay. He's not brought up enough when, you know, in the pantheon of producers. And I'm not sure why that is. Maybe because he kind of makes the same beats. But I think, I mean, when you craft an entire era's worth of beats, you got to get your flowers, man.
Okay. You're going Ant Banks underrated. Nate, this is close to your heart.
Totally. He's yeah. Totally underrated. He even has some vocal moments on some Too Short albums I'm not mad at. Like, he's obviously not a rapper, like a rappity rapper, but
right.
he can talk some shit in the studio. I love Ant Banks. I'm saying underrated, but Dave, I think to your point that we have like Bay Area exceptionalism, like we know about things and like studied things that people outside of this region don't care about. And like I wanna say Rick Rock is similar. Mm. It's like in the hyphy era, Rick sure. Rock was totally inescapable, like a huge architect of the sound. And like people are out there like saying Lil Jon is the best crunk or hyphy producer, but it's like Rick Rock has like 300 songs and
right.
Lil Jon has the one that went, you know, huge because of the kind of call and response and E-40, like putting all the responses. The song I'm talking about is Tell Me When to Go, obviously. That'll be the defining hyphy song for people who are not from around here, but there's so many other ones that just like Rick Rock's beats sound like they're like a quarry and like the slabs of granite are like smashing together. Like he's such a good producer in those sonic terms. And so I just think the Bay Area is quirky and people don't really tend to get it if they're not from around here. And I've read various things that like, there's a lot of Bay Area hip hop fans in like Seattle and Kansas City and these other markets where like it makes it viable to be a Bay Area rapper from a financial standpoint because you can do your like circuit tours not New York, not Atlanta really back in the day, not, you know, other places. So interesting kind of quirk of our fandom and how we grew up, I think.
I just want one East Coast dude to bring up Ant Banks one time.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly.
One time.
Exactly.
Yes, RZA, yes, you know.
Yeah. I think that was a shot at call out culture. Ant Banks, I guess we're going triple cherries here. I will also say underrated. The architect of the sound that came before hyphy. I think Ant Banks was a person who kind of laid that template of what mob music eventually became and a lot of cats ran with. And I feel like, you know, the whole kind of Too Short, Dangerous music kind of era and thing is probably an underrated kind of era to Nate's point. I think if you know, you know, and if you don't, Too Short is kind of at the top of the hill in terms of all that music, but there was something there. And so, yeah, I would definitely agree. Ant Banks, underrated, would be interesting to get him on the show. I'm putting out that energy.
Oh man,
into the ether.
Speaking to the into bank. Existence.
Very good, very good. Nate LeBlanc, do you have a overrated, underrated you'd like to share with the
group? I have one I don't feel strongly about. I more just want to hear what you guys say, and then can we come back to me at the end so I could just riff off what you guys are saying?
Okay.
And that is The Game.
The Game.
How do we feel about The Game? Not the Michael Douglas movie. The L.A. rapper.
Woo! Damon, you go first, because
because of my cats.
Because of your tank top.
Ouch! I walked.
I'm still
into
thinking
that.
Of Nate's Trick Daddy from last week. So
yeah.
Formulating my answer.
Wow. Okay, I'm gonna start with The Game. To a certain age demographic, The Game is a really big deal. I had a conversation with the cat at my job who's maybe 25, 26, and he had Game in his top five. And I was just like, whoa, word? And he you know, not that I agreed, but he kind of had a really eloquent kind of like, hey, you know, when I was whatever teenager. This was like Kendrick Lamar to us. This was like,
right,
you know, and I'm like, but all right. I think he is probably, oh, this is, that's tough. I would say that he's probably underrated in the sense that, you know, he could have been a Dipset member. Like, I think he could have had that kind of, this is our Jim Jones over here. I don't know. I just, and I feel like he a lot of times he's kind of forgotten or as a, some kind of side gimmick to what 50 and them were doing at the time. But as far as superfan rap goes, is what I would put him in that basket. I think he's pretty good. I don't know. It's hard to even say how he's rated. Like,
right.
Is anybody
rating him?
Yeah, is anybody, yeah, like, is he even to be rated at this point?
I think he's a celebrity at this point. Right. He's not really, like, a rapper. But he has, like, two good albums.
Right.
Yeah. Don't ask me what the second one would be.
Right.
It might be Doctor's Advocate. I around that time, I was getting a weed from this dude from Santa Clara, and he was super into the game. So every time I was over there, we'd smoke, and it'd be on. And that's kind of my experience with it. I mean, I think dude has a good voice. I'm not into the music. Doesn't really speak to me. I know he had that big album and big singles. But yeah, man, no game for me.
Yeah. Overrated?
You're going overrated?
Way overrated.
Yeah, oh, I am too. Okay. I'm going overrated as well. It's like he seems to be like a chameleon, which like we used to have a different term for that I'm not quite ready to break out here, but like he's just doing other people's stuff, shtick. Yeah. Like it's mm-hmm. like, who's
he's the game,
right?
And I had this argument with this kid, is that his concept? Like, I am all styles of the game?
I don't think that really is a thing, but, you know, I think he's huge because he came along right at the tail end of when records still sold.
Yep.
And he's like, kind of like, in a non-trap way, he's like the last rap star. He's like the last guy who got huge out of LA. We're not talking about Greedo or Perico or any of the like underground legend dudes. Like this guy's in Rolling Stone.
Totally. Right? Totally.
He's platinum. White people famous. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Platinum. Yeah.
He's on TRL.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I can think of like two songs. They're all from his first album. Bay Area Radio never really messed with the game. Like I think it's like when you go to LA and like, I think Dave mentioned this before. You turn on the radio and they're like, they're playing the new Mac 10 single. It's like, it's now. Right. And you're like, wow, that's weird, man. Yeah. And maybe we have our own version of that up here. But like, the game has just never moved me. Like, he got Dre beats. And Damon, can you give us like a 2-minute version of what actually happened with the G-Unit stuff? Like, do you know?
No, I know that he was part of that Dr. Dre pyramid scheme. And it seemed like they were trying to slot him with 50. Their first, like the first song they did together was huge.
Yeah.
I don't understand like what happened after that. There was some ridiculous falling out, whatever, but I will.
G-U-Not, right? Like he did this whole movement of G-U-Not. That sounds like a joke I would make.
That's terrible. Right.
Bad comedian. He's not buff. No. I don't know exactly how that all fell apart. I guess maybe I'm astonished that he could still be brought up, because in terms of like rapping, 50 is not really doing much of anything right now. Right. Whereas the game was imitating.
He's like a mogul, right? He's got TV shows. He's got.
But he's not. He's not rapping though, right? Like if it's featuring 50 Cent, which he was on a Griselda track, and I was like, if you don't put this dude in the retirement home, like
he was just talking, right?
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
And so Game still has a little bit. He was he was as recently as last year was like doing stuff. So I don't know. That's very interesting. We will appreciate your feedback on that one. Because I'm not strong either way. I'm gonna hold on to underrated just to be the West Coast homer that I've been for the past 5 weeks. It's a theme. All right. So this one kind of staying on this side of the country. Overrated, underrated. I would like to bring to the fore a rapper that was suggested to us by the good folks at Weird Rap, and that is Sir Mix-a-Lot. Overrated, underrated. He sold a shit ton of records, going back to the kind of when you could sell a lot of records. Baby Got Back is probably, you know, the one song that if you're walking down the street and you mention Sir Mix-a-Lot, somebody would know what that is.
My mom's favorite song.
Of course.
My mom loves Baby Got Back and Shoop. Those are her rap songs.
That sounds about right.
I mean, yeah. that's pretty good. There's a 90s mix in there.
When I hear the Anaconda part, I hear my mom saying it, which I don't know what that says about me, but it's terrible for everyone involved.
Even Nicki Minaj. So Sir Mix-a-Lot had huge hits, but those of us on the West Coast, I actually have family in Seattle. He was a big, big deal a long time before that, in terms of West Coast.
Yeah, he's like their rap. E-40, right? He was like the representative for the whole area.
And he was pre, like, E-40. He already had traction in the industry. We're talking pre-40. Wow.
I had to, sorry.
Dave is out here.
The Sonics were really super.
Ouch. 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 My Posse on Broadway.
Love that one.
That sounds huge.
Square Dance Rap. There's just
less, but I like it.
You don't like when he says cotton picker and he's rapping in an auctioneer voice? Which the baby reprised that cadence on a song, like Little Baby, not Da Baby. Little Baby reprised that cadence on a song 2 years ago, which I thought was hilarious.
Wow.
But he had songs. He had this huge hit. And again, is it because he's from just a non kind of, well, I mean, I don't know. Is Seattle a non-rap city? I mean, they have Grammy award-winning rappers that come from that city. I'm going to go overall in the pantheon of hip hop, considering what he's done and the hits that he's had, that he's a little bit underrated.
I would agree
as well. It's like, Baby Got Back is overrated and everything else is wildly underrated. Right? Like, okay, he's essentially thought of as a one-hit wonder, but he's not a one-hit wonder.
Yeah,
right, insane. Right. Those albums were pretty solid. I mean, like, My Posse was on Broadway. I big fan of that track, and, you know, he's funny. He's a funny rapper. You know, who doesn't know his white friend Larry?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like, real estate investor. Right? Makes a lot of money. Yeah. Responsible for gentrification in Seattle. That's 40 was telling you, not 40. Sir Mix-a-Lot, the 40 of Seattle.
Yeah, it's funny. He has one of those like Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble rap names.
Okay,
like Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Like, is that part of it though?
That got caught up in the kind of
people are
like doing this with their hand and
making
rapper scratching hands. Sounds and stuff. Okay.
Like, well, okay. I mean, he comes off so novelty, even down to his name. You can't be a Sir Blank a lot of anything and be taken seriously.
Right. Yeah. He that was the grand opening, grand closing for that name construction.
But I love the album cuts. I love the production on his albums. You know, it just sucks that dude had the most novelty song of all time. You know, and everything else.
And of course, it's the hugest thing in the world. Like,
totally.
Still talking about it to this day. You cannot talk about him without talking about that.
But I will say this. Pre-Lizzo, pre any kind of body positivity, anything, Baby Got Back, kind of maybe overrated and cheesy as a song, but as a cultural seed, nobody is spelling thick with three C's if it wasn't for Baby Got Back. Like,
positive.
Yeah, in his own way. Like, women, I know that's terribly objectifying in some ways of that song. But this whole conversation about different types of body types and this whole idea of, like, hip-hop not being built around a skinny white woman was codified in Baby Got Back. Like, he gave
early.
Name
like very, very early. Yeah.
Super early. So Anacondas and Hondas,
Jane Fonda.
So we're all going underrated on that.
Yeah. I do think he's quite underrated. I actually want to go back and listen to some stuff. He had an interesting career too, cause he was like independent dude. And that's what I love so much about the West Coast is like, you have to like, when you talk about Too Short, you have to talk about the 75 right. Girls era and the right. Jive era.
Right.
It's
right.
like pretty different. Like that's basically a different guy. You right. know what I mean? Like
right.
the core tenets are the same, but it's a totally different sound. And Sir Mix-a-Lot, the Deaf American era or whatever, it's like, right. it's just, it's it's not as raw and it's not as like 8080, but that doesn't mean it's not raw or 8080. You know what
at
I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, Swass, his first record, is really, really that fun.
So good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's got My Hoopties on it. He mentioned San Jose, which as a youngster, really made a big difference in my life.
Collect those little references.
Felt seen. One day we're going to do a mini segment about all five of the major San Jose references. we're going to parse through them. Because I looked at San Jose's music Wikipedia page the other day.
Oof.
Oof.
What'd you do with the other 23 hours and 58 minutes of the day?
It cried into my hands. That was pretty tough. So we'll dive into that on a future episode of Dad Bod Rap Pod. But on this hot-ass summer edition of the pod, we have another dope guest lined up for you guys. A person who I kind of can't believe has not been on the program thus far, that we're this far into our run here and we haven't talked to. That would be Tajay from Souls of Mischief. We look forward to chopping it up with him on the other side of the break. Dad Bod Rap Pod. Dad Bod Rap Pod, back once again, another dope interview. In our eternal mission to get every member of Hieroglyphics on the show, we are very pleased and privileged to have on the line Tajay from the Mighty Souls of Mischief. How's it going, man?
Peace, man. Chilling.
Yeah, you in AC right now, or what's the situation?
Yeah. We're coming back from a Joshua Tree, so I'm chilling.
Ooh, okay.
It's a lot cooler out there, though, than where I am now.
Man, yeah, it's wild out here. Still not hot enough to burn off the Rona. Don't believe it. So we are obviously huge fans of your work, of the work of Hieroglyphics. Can you give us just a kind of the start? Can you just give us a little bit of insight as like, when did you first connect with the crew? Like, when did you first start interacting with the MCs that would eventually become Souls of Mischief and Hieroglyphics as a collective?
Oh man, I think I had kindergarten with A Plus and Casual.
Oh wow!
Whoa! Okay.
So around them, me, Casual, A Plus, and they all went to Howard Elementary School.
Wow!
East Oakland. So yeah, we've been homies since then. And then as far as rapping, I started rapping with A Plus in 1983.
So, okay.
Since 83 has been when we started. There were a lot of names. The Syndicate, Rhythm and Excellence, a bunch of names. And when Dell kind of got bigger, he was called TDK Plus 30, and we were like the Plus 30. a lot of stuff. So, you know, Casual's been Casual a long time. I think he was like Jam and Jay or something like that. You know, a long time ago. But then he soon became Casual. He's been down a long time. About since 83, I've been rapping with A Plus, and then we started sort of forming a crew after, Hiro, probably, 10th grade or something like that. But I mean, okay. We're all friends prior to that.
Right on. If you don't mind breaking down just a little bit about the history of around the time you guys started Hiro Imperium and just went independent. What were some of the factors that led to that? And kind of what did you guys learn about, you know, starting an indie record label?
Oh, yeah. Well, we were on Elektra, Souls of Mischief and Casual, and Extra Prolific was in the crew at the time. And then we were on Jive, and Dell was on Elektra.
Right.
And we got dropped all around the same time, around 94. I guess rap was kind of changing, you know. I think the idea that you could really make some pop money through rap became something that the labels were looking for. I mean, we weren't also the most compliant group. So we got dropped. And then instead of going back to labels, because labels wanted to pick us up, Domino was like, well, let's make a record. And so we started recording the High Road, what eventually became Third Eye Vision.
Okay.
And then once we had the record, we were just like, let's go indie. So we found a distributor. Our first distributor, man, I wish I remember these names. These dudes was crooks. I mean, we made a lot of money with them, but they stole a lot of money too. I think they probably still owe us like 80 stacks or something like that.
Wow. Whoa.
Brown level or something like that. They were crooks in general. Like, they had a dummy business that they were siphoning money to and all kind of stuff.
Wow.
So I said, we learned that. You can't just sign with a non-reputable distributor. Sign with somebody who really gets down. And then after a while, once we moved from there, we started getting distributed by Universal. So I guess what we learned at the time is, hey, the label takes a lion's share of your money. And when we came out, being indie was a really cool thing. Like, we're making hand over fist money probably at least 10 times what we would have made on the major label. Plus, we just had a lot more creative control and ability to sort of decide on how we wanted to be perceived and what we wanted to back. And I mean, we've been indie ever since. So, I mean, basically, Dale was probably signed in 91. So from 91 to 94, we were on major labels. From 2004 to 2020, we've been on, 94. Not 94, maybe 96 to 2020. We've been indie. So 24 years indie, 3 years on the label, I guess, obviously is the smarter choice.
Dope.
Do you find yourself still inspired to rap? Like, do you think in rap verses? Do you have a notebook? Like, do you consider yourself to be an everyday rapper, or is running the label and living your life and being a family man like part of a bigger part of your life now?
Oh, man, you can ask my family. Like, anything that rhymes, I'll be rhyming. So
okay.
All of us are probably more rappers than anything. You know, I mean, even, you know, I'm an architectural designer, so I design buildings every day, but this beat's playing while I design the building. So,
right.
You know, I mean, during the Rona, I'm using the same computer as my studio, so I definitely take breaks and record songs.
So,
but yeah, I mean, running the label was a huge part. You had to find a balance, strike a balance. So I say it does detract, or has been allowed to detract, but as we progress and as technology changes and makes things easier, I mean, even something like a rhyme folder, like, I think I lost my last rhyme folder in January. And so now I'm all digital, like, just back the wraps up, you know, same way you back up anything else. So I write on my phone. They look fresher when you write them on paper, but I mean, I just did a song with Nappy Nina, and she recorded her verse. And I had my rhyme written. It was fresh, too. And I can't find it because I lost it at a Home Depot. You know, I lost my rhyme. So I'm like, I'm done with rap folders. You know, I used to get moleskins and all, you know, like cool.
Yeah.
Nice folders. I'm done. So I probably lost as many good raps as I have recorded.
Damn. Somebody at Home Depot got bars right now, though.
I don't know. Probably sound like Silk the Shocker trying to say it.
So. Oh man, that's great, Tajay. I mean, since I have your ear, we would be remiss if we did not talk about 93 to Infinity, the track. And could you just humor us? And what do you remember most about the making of that song from your perspective, the time and the music itself?
Oh, I mean, we were in the studio. It was the last song I think we made for the 93 to Infinity album.
Oh, wow.
A-Plus was playing the record, and I think he said, yeah, keep this beat I just made, and then he played it to us, and we're like, oh, that's dope, that's going on there, and he was like, oh, I already promised the Pep, so we had to call it override, you know, whatever you would call that in government terms. And
veto.
I mean, we recorded it, yeah, exactly, we kind of vetoed it, and I mean, he was gracious enough, and Pep was gracious enough to be like, that's cool, you know, and then we recorded it. And it ends up being the title track and the favorite track of the label. I mean, I guess the favorite track of everybody for a while. So it definitely was like a fluke that it came together like that. But I mean, when we reported, we knew it. We was like, oh, this is gonna be big, you know. But,
oh, okay. So it was apparent.
18-year-old brain, though, we assume big meant like, you know, like big, more like underground hip hop big. I mean, right. Now in 27 years later,
yeah,
that song is bigger than probably most rap songs. For, you know, as far as like remakes, identifiability. International appeal, reuse, and all that. I'm not going to say it's bigger than, like, Can't Touch This or anything like that with regard to sales, but just, like, that track, I think, connects so many people, and I don't think that many have sort of the visceral, I hate this song reaction that they would have to a lot of songs that are a lot bigger.
Right. So, yeah.
I mean, but we knew it would be big when we made it. It's not like we were like, oh, wow. I mean, we didn't know that, you know, 30 years later we'd still be having viable careers, whereas like the label that we're on doesn't even exist anymore. But
right,
I will say it occupies an interesting space where the real heads claim it and normal people still know about it, and it's so easily identifiable with the time and the place. And I think it encapsulates what was great about Bay Area music and underground hip hop at that time in a non corny way, which is just a really hard needle to thread.
Yeah, I think it's an outlier in that respect. I think the only other song that really occupies a similar space is probably They Reminisce Over You.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Just as far classics. As when the beat comes on, and, you know, it did well, but it didn't do so well that people hate it. And like right. You said, underground heads and mainstream heads both kind of like, yeah, that was my jam, you know?
Tajay, I follow you on Twitter. I see you on there all the time. And
don't do that.
But, you know,
that's my
kid
talking. That's not really me.
Intern, yeah. But I, you know, it seems like you still very much follow and keep up with like the new music that's coming out. I think you tweeted about 38 Spesh a while back, and I'm like, that's the dude right now. Like, I love his stuff. Just to that point, what else are you listening to? Like of new guys?
Ooh, new guys. Yeah, it'll be probably ooh. Like, I like 38 Special and Benny and Conway and all them.
Yep.
I like Nappy Nina.
Yeah.
I should be able to rattle this off. That new Pete Rock and Camp Low, man, oh. That's the best record out right now.
Oh, really? Okay.
Tiffany's Part 2.
Man, yeah, 80 incredible. Blocks from Tiffany's. Yeah.
Yeah, 80 blocks. Yeah, record. Yeah, I know. Yeah. No, 80 blocks. Yeah, that record is incredible, though. Who else? There's a guy, Jamal Gasol.
Okay.
From Buffalo. Yeah.
Yep.
There's a dude, he's from Niagara Falls, I think, actually. I don't know if that's, you know, my geography is really good.
I never thought we'd get to a point where rappers were from Niagara
Demo,
Falls.
Dot Demo. Yeah, I mean, that's dope, though. You know, like, you know, I'm glad that with all the Special and all them, at least New York is. You know, at least the state is holding it down, you know?
And yeah, absolutely.
When things are amiss in the Mecca, that means the entire, you know, if the brain has a problem, the body has a problem. Mm. I mean, that we've seen these issues arise, you know, worldwide. I mean, if the Mecca's not straight, the entire Ummah is not straight, you know? So it's cool that at least somewhere near the Mecca, there's like some healing going on.
Absolutely.
But, who else? Dot Demo. Last Artful Dodger, she's hella raw, dude. It's a lot of stuff. There's so much stuff, and I should be.
It's a pretty solid list. I gotta say, the Dot Demo is the only one I didn't know.
Dot Demo is dope. I think Bronx or Uptown. It might be way Uptown. I don't know. Okay. Oh, there's this dude named Awate, AWATE. He's out of the UK. It's just, there's a lot of stuff. It's hard to kind of keep up because there's so much stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but I just try to listen to everything and stay sharp, you know, keep my two-step, try to stay ahead of everybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that the people who fall off are no longer fans of the music or they take a break. And so I think we've done either. And as a result, we've been able to stay, like, with good knees out here and not, you know, not stiff. But yeah. I think it's really important to listen to new hip hop. I think the people who don't fall off. Like, they're so caught up in their thing unless you're like a savant, you know, where it's just like you do what you do and you probably don't listen to any rap at all except yourself. For the most part, you got to listen to the young rappers just to see where they're going. I mean, even the Weak Fools, too, in the popular mainstream groups, just to see what not to do, too. Like, I don't like using the same word combinations, too. So a lot of that, like, you know, you want to ride Niagara Falls or something, and somebody else has done it. Right. You know, it's like, it's, you should have known that, you know?
Right. Right, right. Thank you for answering that. That's perfect, man.
That's dope. You mentioned working with Nappy Nina, which is great. She's a great new voice. What's up next for you? Like, what is kind of in the pipe for Tajay?
I just finished. Nah, I'm lying. I got like 2 songs left. Yeah, it's almost done though.
Okay.
A record. Me and the architect.
Okay.
We got a record called Black Tech. And then I'm making like some hip house and new jack swing stuff with Breakbeat Lou, who is Soul's Mission's DJ, with Architect. And,
okay.
He DJs as well as Architect with us. The record is just with Breakbeat Lou. Then I guess that's really it, man. I want to get a new Hyrule record done, but really just finishing this Black Tech record. And then I got something called Black Hoodie Chronicles. That's like part 2. That's from the Rap Noir.
Okay.
Franchise. So Rap Noir is more, you know, Hitchcock-esque kind of gritty Sin City type stuff. And then me and the architect, the Black Tech thing, I think what I wanted to do is make the record that I wanted to make when I was 16, like just kind of like a pitch record, like a Chill Out G meets like 45 King, you know, real koofy rap, you know what I'm saying?
Okay. All, like,
the era where you kind of had to be semi-conscious and but still street, but you kind of had to have, like, banging groove, like King Sun.
Mm. Wow, King Sun.
Rob G, Lakim Shabazz, you know, Orange Professor.
Wow, that sounds amazing. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm really happy with it. I sneak off to play it. If I'm in the bathroom, I play it. But I don't listen to my records once they come out, kind of, so I have to replay them while I'm making them so that I can make sure that they're authentic to my original vision.
Oh. That's dope. I actually never heard someone say that before. Well, dope. Tajay, we really appreciate you coming on the program, sharing your time with us. We're huge fans, and we just looking forward to everything coming up for you, man. Appreciate it.
Oh, man, thank you for having me. I hope that y'all are safe, and I see that you're in 3 different places, unless you're in 3 corners of the same room. I see that, you know. I wish I would have bought some Zoom stock before this all went down.
Man.
It's crazy. But, yeah, I appreciate y'all even having interest. Whenever, man, just reach out. Y'all have my number. If you need to send me the expert opinion.
Oh, dope. All right. I appreciate you,
stuff,
man.
Whatever. If you got to call it on Rap Lifeline or whatever, hit me up.
That's dope. All right. Thank you so much.
Man. Thank you, man. Peace. Right,
be well.
Peace.
Oh, that's funny.
Experimental and otherwise weird rap music? And do you like helping to make the world a less horrific place? Well, then you'll love the new Weird Rap Records compilation album, Interdependence. Featuring exclusive tracks from Clipping, Cool Keith, Mike Ladd, Ramel Z, AWOL 1, Beans, Mestizo, and many more. With all profits going to Mutual Aid Disaster Relief, a collectively operated volunteer network providing aid to victims of natural disasters, now including the COVID-19 pandemic. Check it out at weirdrap.com.
Dr. What? lay courtesy cuts. Word like scrap metal, push to the pedal, super extraordinary scientific reason my theory.
All right, Dad Bod, Rap Pod, we are back. That was our interview with Tajay from Souls of Mischief. Super cool for him to kind of make time. He was on his way back from Joshua Tree.
That's so cool. I think it's possible, and I thought this when we were talking about what we're about to talk about now, he's the smartest rapper. He's like, his verses are always brilliant and full of all this interesting information and illusion. He's an architect.
Right.
He runs his own record label. He went to Stanford.
Right.
Like, he's like, goes to Joshua Tree. So he's pretty fucking smart, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Since 93. I mean,
yeah.
Exactly. I
mean, well, since 83, if
right.
We're, you know, his timeline.
That was so cool. I wish we could have dug into that more. It's just the sonics in the car were a little rough, but
yeah.
Super cool of him to come through. I would love to like do a more structured thing at some point. He's an awesome guy.
And also, like, I like that he's still a fan of the culture. His comment about staying current and not letting your knees get stiff, I think is great advice for rappers of a particular age. So it's dope to see that still going. Yeah.
I mean, even if their songs have changed, I mean, they are still ageless. You know what I mean? They're just still ferocious on the mic. I mean, yeah, that project they did with Adrian Young a few years ago, it was Souls of Mischief. They're always going to be Souls of Mischief, you know?
Yep. And to a large degree, still have it, and which is not the case for a lot of rappers. We talked about this on the show, of rappers who kind of can't fill their old shoes anymore. And I think that's certainly the case. I haven't heard Dell in a while, but I kind of feel like Dell's another one of those guys where if you just wake him up in the morning, he could give you 48 brilliant bars, you know what I mean, like on point.
I think it's interesting what he was saying though about staying current, and he probably knows a lot more rappers and their listening habits than we do, and he seemed to be implying that like people fall out of love with hip-hop and that's when they fall off.
Yeah.
Not implying, like saying,
yeah,
right,
that's when you lost
to be some people you could think of. Yeah, I wanted to do that to him, and I wasn't sure if it would come through. Yeah, so that's when they lost?
Who? Yeah.
No, that's. Yeah. I think that's 100% correct, because I feel like we see this with rappers who kind of, the more disillusioned cats are the ones who usually don't have it anymore. And I think if you stay a fan of the culture, it was great to hear him verbalize it, maybe something
totally.
I thought, but for a person of his pedigree and stature to state that, I thought was dope. Like, yeah.
It's kind of like, why are you making rap if you don't like rap?
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? I think totally. Some people just get stuck in it and feel like they have to do it, or they make an album because that's you know, their job.
Right.
Right.
And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes you just like, you don't hear any, it's not even hunger. Cause he's like well past the hunger part. It's like,
totally.
You don't hear any interest.
Right.
It's right. Like it's love of the game, right? It's kind of like if you're still in love with rap, when Q-Tip in the Beats, Rhymes, and Life documentary talks about, like, we're not athletes. Like, we could just do this forever. Like, there's no,
right.
You know what I mean? There's no date of expiration. I saw Roy Ayers a couple of years ago. He was fucking 77. Like,
yeah,
you know, still doing it. You know what I mean?
Killing it.
Yeah.
Well, so, if you're inspired, then it will translate to the audience. You know what I mean? So
absolutely, and we stay inspired on this program to talk shit about rap music. It's interesting because Tajay, being kind of my age cohort, being able to say we did a record that came out 27 years ago, and
that's
like, and it's still, and it still goes. I'm kind of like, I didn't get this in, but I'm like, it's still, is there a Hyro Day without 93 Till?
Is that it the no way. Culmination of it,
no
right?
Way.
That's yeah. always the peak of everything.
Yeah, and they usually ended with that song.
Oh, really?
You okay. know, yeah.
Okay. That I wanted to ask him if he felt like trapped by it, but by the way he was answering, I could tell he didn't.
Right,
but
yeah, right.
Not that the thought has never crossed his mind.
Right. I mean, he's an entrepreneur. That's just one of his successes. You sure. know what I mean?
He let out a huge yawn before he started talking about it.
He did.
He's like, really all funny. The 93 till questions.
Oh. Yeah, I know. I had to do it. I couldn't resist.
No,
yeah.
You have to. You have to. It's absolutely. Like they're not gonna have Sir Mix-a-Lot on and not ask about Baby Got Back.
And not rap every verse to him.
Yeah, pretty much.
So what did you do? The side bends or the sit-ups? What are we talking about here?
Oh my gosh.
We I don't take think side bends is a real that sounds like a very old school nope. exercise. That's not a real thing anymore.
He's
is
talking
it?
About Jane Fonda, so
right.
put some shit on those tapes.
Gotcha.
You know, we'll go back and do the math. If you have information on side bends from workout tapes, hit us up at DadBodRapPod on Twitter, at DadBodRapPod on IG. If you're doing side bends and you want to do some pictures of it, I want to call this out here. I know this is not DadBod Dancehall Pod, but as a kind of a skinny-ish dude with a big-ass belly, like this weekend's battle between Bounty Killer and Beanie Man really spoke to me in a real intentional way. Number one, amazing. This is like the first one that I actually like kind of watched while it was nice. Happening. And it's a reminder, number one, that the great dancehall kings have more energy than all the rappers put together, combined.
It's like everybody's Busta Rhymes.
Everybody, totally. But like Busta Rhymes is like the starting point, right? Bounty Killer gets going and you're just like, I am about to go to straight to hell right now. This is amazing and frightening. But Beanie Man's extra medium t-shirt with his belly protruding from it. It's already been gift and memed. It's great. Great cultural moment.
Were they together?
Yeah. It was in one thing.
They don't social distance in Jamaica?
No! Sorry. That's the best I could do, guys. I'm sorry.
No mask rhythm.
Yeah.
Oh man.
So they were in the same spot, which made the audio better, and their interaction, although not CDC approved,
right. They're bros though, right? Like,
yes.
Like frenemies.
Yes. It seemed like they're really cool. And if you see, I've seen other videos where the dance hall kind of legends will do that kind of like screaming trade-off thing that they were doing. Like, that's a thing. Like, that's their cipher. Like, oh, I'm going to cut you off and then push you.
Right.
And
then we'll, it's a sound clash,
sing,
right?
Yeah, sound clash. We're all singing the songs together, like the ones we know. And so great energy there. Great moments in Dad Bod history. Bounty Killer's Bald Spot.
I did not watch. I like 13 dancehall songs. I'm sure I would have been lost after like the first round.
Oh no, I have no clue what was going on. But dude, I haven't. Apollo, DJ Apollo of the Scratch Pickles, has the penultimate dancehall mix.
Yes,
you should check it out.
I'm the same. That's for me. That's all the dancehall I'll ever need. And if it's not on there, I don't know it. But if it's on there, I know every word.
Right.
Yeah.
So shout out to Dancehall Kings. Tonight, though, is one that is a battle that's near and dear to Nate's heart. It is 112 versus Jagged Edge. Who you got? And
I think I actually like a 112 song, so I'm gonna go 112.
Same. It's the one. It's the track with Biggie on it, right?
Yeah.
112. Where the players dwell.
Yes,
which song is
the room. I don't know the name of the song. It was like how little I paid attention to R&B at this point. It's their main song. What is that?
Jagged Edge? No Diggity? No, that's Blackstreet.
No, that's Blackstreet.
Yeah.
Oh Lord, it's like
I don't turn the radio, but I don't know any of the guys' names. Like, I just did not pay attention to stuff like that. Like, when that stuff was happening, I was so hip hop. Like, I just didn't follow it. It's like they play it at the school dance, and that's where I would get my fill of R&B, and then like just I don't know anything about them really.
Okay, so Nate is taking the Vegas pick, 112 and the points tonight's versus battle.
They just put Uncut Gems on Netflix. Have you guys watched it?
Yeah.
All right.
Loved it. Loved it.
Now that it's on Netflix, everyone can watch it. I was going to do the give me 112 when the tip off and
yeah, oh yeah. Oh, man.
But I don't know enough about the references to make the joke work.
Uncut Gems is one of the penultimate fucking degenerate gambler movies. Can I interject
and say I don't think you're using that word
right.
Penultimate means the one before the last.
To the last.
The best degenerate gambler movie is Casino.
So you are using it right. You used it before too, though, and you were saying it, something else was the penultimate, and I was like, I don't think he's using it right. But you're right. The
Dad Bod Word Pod. Yes. Thank you.
Penultimate fighting.
Yeah.
The second best fighting you can watch.
The first best fighting is on this program right
here. For me,
here,
any
right
fight
now.
I got in would be my last, so there would never be a penultimate.
Oh, man. That's what friends are for, folks. Correcting your grammar.
You were right. You were right. I seem like a dick, and for a good reason.
Yeah, but he'll edit it to make a... Ouch. It's hot, folks. We're doing our best. All right. Yes. So this week, we are back to our segment. Yeah, nah, meh, where we take an album suggested by one of the bros and we listen to it and we render our verdict. The last 2 weeks, we talked about Mozzie's Bulletproof something or other. You can obviously see.
That was your pick, sir.
Yeah.
We loved it.
Yeah.
Unforgettable.
Last week, it was Logi, correct?
Yeah, lo and behold.
Lo and behold. This week, Dave Ma, what did we listen to, and give us your verdict?
This week, our pick is Focus, which is Souls of Mischief's third album, which I believe was, it wasn't released digitally forever. It was their first release when they started Hyrule Imperium.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for a while, you could only get it on like weird limited wax and or cassettes. So I actually found the cassette the other day randomly. So I was like, fuck it, we'll just listen to it and do it. And also, you know, as a homework assignment, I was like, I didn't really want to dive into Brother Lynch, you know what I mean, like
anymore.
Listen to the Souls album, you know.
Yeah. But we did not plan this to happen this way. Like we reviewed Focus before
we knew Tajay was
on.
Coming
right
on.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Right. Yeah. So having said that, I'm gonna give it a yeah minus.
I like how I do a rating
given
scale
the circumstances.
And motherfuckers circumstances. Invent their own ratings, but go ahead. You have three choices, but go ahead.
I mean, it's you know, it's kind of a sunny listen, but I think it's more memorable than their second album, which is completely forgettable, and some of the songs were just completely almost like offensively bad. But okay. I mean, having said that, I mean, Focus, I still like. I like the production on it. It's just a little bit too wordy. I feel like there's segments where it's like, how long was that hook? That was like a 16-bar hook of just them saying the same four things. So things like that bothered me about it. I like how they had like these little individual sections. Opio always sounds pretty good. He had some fire verses on there. And Tajay is, you know, I made this comparison before, how like Redman is always Redman. He'll always be Redman. Yeah. And Souls of Mischief sounds that way. And specifically Tajay and Opio to me. So
okay,
it was nice to revisit, but you know, I can kind of see where this is going.
So Dave Ma, for the record, gave it a yeah, but like a lukewarm one. Nate, sometimes you have fiery takes and opinions. What did you think?
I did not particularly enjoy listening to this. I had heard it when it came out, and I saw them live a ton at this time. And when I'm looking at the Discogs page for it, it looks like a bootleg
record.
Like it looks like they bootlegged themselves, which in a way they kind of did by starting their own label.
Genius.
I will say the highlight for me is that they frame the whole album around these Ken Nordine vocal samples. I love Ken Nordine and like the idea of word jazz. So like all those weird, slow, gloopy interludes are, you know, Ken Nordine samples, so that like rings my record collecting bell. And I really like Tajay's basically solo track Pay Dues that starts this off. I was like, damn, this is fire. Like
totally.
These verses are so good, they're just jam-packed with information. Like, is this how this is gonna be? and then it's kind of not like
right.
It sounds like similar to the Beats, Rhymes, and Life style album, where it's like they're still good at making music, but they're getting a little sick of each other, so they're in their separate corners
doing it.
And so it's like it's more like solo songs from each of the guys than it is like a group album at times. And it's just not as fun for me. Like the mm-hmm. one of the great things about the great work of Souls of Mischief is how they play off of each other.
100%.
It's not quite like a Beastie Boys cut up method kind of thing. It's just like they riff on each other's things, and that mm-hmm. requires a lot of communication and a lot of like time spent, and this just doesn't have that. It's lacking that. And I also found the beats to be somewhat one note, like mm-hmm. one idea. It's like mm-hmm. here's the beat, click, now it's going for until the song's over. Like there's no switch ups, there's no chops, like it's just there's just not a lot going on. And I have to say, at the end when Casual comes in, he is so welcome. He's just so swaggy, dude. Like it's just like his, like I listened to this while I was riding my bike around my neighborhood yesterday, because there's like no cars and it's awesome time to ride bikes. So I was having a good time. It was a lovely day and I wanted to like it a lot. And I liked the Shift the Sands track, and I liked the Casual track, and I liked the Tajay solo track, Pay Dues. But overall, I would have to give it a meh.
Gonna go meh. Okay. Okay. I'm glad you mentioned this whole idea of them doing these solo tracks on it, because the track listing will say Souls of Mischief featuring Opio.
That's how it's on that. Like when they uploaded it to streaming, they definitely noted whose song it is.
Whose songs they are.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting.
Featuring me.
I actually have the tape, and they do that on the cassette too.
Oh, there you go.
So
that was intentional from
consistent.
The start.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I vaguely remember this record. I think because it was kind of hard to get after a while, and for me, you know, my Souls of Mischief fandom probably had crested a little bit. Mm-hmm. I didn't listen to this record a lot, so it was cool to like, okay, this is what they were on in 98. And I kind of, that's what I went into it with, is kind of like, okay, 1998, this is what Souls of Mischief are on. They're like 3 years removed from their, you know, their biggest hit and the record we all know and love them for. And like Nate, I really like Pay Dues. Where the record kind of slows down for me, and again, I'll echo Nate here, is the production. It seems kind of caught in between trying to do something that sounds kind of Bay Area, like slightly mobby, but also incorporating samples in a particular way. And I don't think it did a great job of either of those. The couple of tracks where it's like more of a straightforward kind of, here's the sample loop, and kind of have, I want to even just say more East Coasty feel, felt better to me. They obviously can all wrap their asses off. Like there's no sign of a drop off. It's one of those records where I go, this is probably why they have executive producers and people to come in and say, yes, this track, no, not that track. It feels like they did some songs, put the songs together, put the songs out. It doesn't kind of have an album feel. So I'm going to go with a meh, but it is making me want to go and listen to Soul's second album, which Dave just trashed here, which very well could not be good. That was their last Jive record right before they got dropped. And I'm trying to, my foggy memory, I'm trying to remember how I felt about that record. So meh on this, but it may make me go back and check out the second one.
This like leads me to like something that I've been wanting to talk about, and I think I've alluded to this, but I haven't really said it yet on the show. Like I think I always wanted to be seen as someone who had like refined taste. So there's like a ton of things I just never listened to. I was like, basically, like let's go with Tribe's second album, No Man's Land. I'm looking at the, I know I've heard Rocket Like That because it's the single and had the 12 inch.
You mean Souls.
Yes. Thank you guys. And I'm like, I don't think I ever listened to this, because I think I looked at the cover and I was like, this is no 93 till infinity. And I just didn't listen to it. And I was like, I'm sure I'm right. And I can listen to it now with new ears, but it's like I saved all this stuff for myself. Like I was like, I don't have time for that. I'm keeping up with what's new.
Sure.
This doesn't look that good. It's not going to be as good as their best work. And like, it's kind of a weird privileged position to be like, I only listen to the finest Souls of Mischiefs. You know what I mean? It's like, again, to talk about Dave Chappelle, he's like, when he's Diddy, he's like, only the finest Cambodian breast milks. Like, it's like, there's probably some very delicious Cambodian breast milks. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, it's like right. I just didn't really give it my time because I wanted to be this discerning rap fan who knew the best shit. But yeah, like, to get to really know the best shit, you have to listen to everything.
Right.
And I just didn't for a time. Like, you I would have had to buy this for $17.
Oh, that's the other
$17
part.
Yeah, was like totally a lot of money.
Yeah.
And like, have part. A CD that, like, you know, I was never the biggest CD guy. So yeah, it's just, it's weird revisiting the past through the current lens because there's huge gaps in my knowledge. But I don't feel like I missed that much because I trust my old sense of discernment.
And also, nobody's rushing and going, have you heard No Man's Land? You know, it's not as if there was some revivalist thing behind it to make you go, because that happens sometimes too.
Totally.
You know, others will be like, we slept on this. But I feel like Souls of Mischief and Hyro in general, their business model and their approach to how they sold the music for a time was a bigger deal than the music itself. You know what I mean? Like, the way they did it mattered more than what they did. If you see them live, they're dope. They're super dope live. I mean, I think Hyro across the board. But I want to check out No Man's Land because I love to go, and I didn't get to ask Tajay this, and be like, I wonder what label pressures made y'all record this. Or who are you fighting with? Who'd you have to fight with to get this song on the album? And like, just trying to go back into that. They had come off of having, you know, an underground hit, so to speak, and having to go back in the studio and make another major label album. Right. And then for Jive to be like, we don't care at all. Like, this is completely, you know. So I want to go back for that kind of sense of it. But to Nate's point, I maybe ran that one time. You know, one or two times. I definitely didn't listen to it too tough. I was a much bigger fan of the Hyro album releases. That's what kind of brought me back into the fold of like,
totally, yeah, it was Hyro a big music deal. And to hear Tajay tell it, it was a really smart decision for them to do that. And they kind of like, they inspired the initial wave of underground hip hop, and then they cashed in on the
sound of underground hip hop,
which like, I'm so happy to hear.
Yes. One of the
very
great
few people
stories
played it that well. Like, most of the people we've talked to, like kind of like your Gifted Gabs and your Gift of Gabs and your other underground kind of guys that we were really into, they caught that wave and just pressed up some 12 inches and became a part of it right then. They didn't have the precursor stuff that was known. They were probably rhyming at school or whatever, but they weren't like professional rappers previously. They came into the game during the underground movement, so it's interesting to have the perspective of both.
Yeah, 100%.
And I feel like also another question I didn't get to ask because my guy was in the car, but their place, Hieroglyphics' place in Bay Area music lore, you know, there's no other crew that has a day, that has a municipal day. Although I had a friend who went to work for the city of Vallejo. And I swear to God, I took her out to coffee and I lobbied for an Earl Stevens Boulevard in Vallejo.
Nice.
And she was like, okay, Damone, you're kind of freaking me out right now.
Yeah, but I think that'll happen someday. I think like
it should.
Yeah.
Totally. I'm surprised it hasn't.
Why not? Anyway.
Though I'm against naming things again for people who are still alive.
Okay. Just,
we have this in my day job. We have the discussion about naming things quite a bit. And I'm like, it's just, there's a lot of people whose past is already the past that we could name something after, kind of for like Me Too-ish reasons. Like, I just don't think we should be naming anything after anyone who's still alive. Like, they still have time to ruin it.
Oh, I see where you're going with that.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we don't know these people.
Yeah. Doja Cat Boulevard would be terrible right now.
Exactly. Right after the Bitch I'm a Cow video, we would have thought that was a good idea. Now we know we would have had to be changing all the road signs.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I believe in giving you your flowers, though. I mean, you could have given Muhammad Ali a boulevard before he passed. No big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a pretty good person, and that's a good example that counteracts kind of what I'm saying.
But I totally hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not going to posit that he would not be deserving.
Totally. But, or, you know, if, I don't know, if Rakim got something special, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, Rakim Boulevard, Mike Fiend Boulevard.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. No?
Nate's going no Rakim Boulevard.
Okay. Okay. This is,
Nate is against Rakim Boulevard.
This is
at
gossipy.
Dad Bod Rap Pod.
This is gossipy, but Rakim's recent public appearances have made it seem like he had a very hard time for a period of time.
Look, I'm holding.
Do you think that he acted nobly that entire time?
Absolutely. He acted with, comported himself very well.
Well, we name things to people to their accomplishments, not because of who they are as people.
So that's a very interesting take on it.
I mean, that's what we've been doing. Yeah. Supposedly.
Tell that to the Bill Cosby building at Temple University.
I know.
He was the pinnacle. Totally. God, he's the exact guy why you don't name anything after anyone who's still alive.
But even if you name it after they're dead, like, there's still folks who are, you know, there's Robert E. Lee statues all across the fucking country. Right. So it depends. I'm with Dave. I'm going to petition for Rakim Boulevard along with, I want Magazine Street renamed Earl Stevens Boulevard. This is my platform, Vote Demo 2020. Dad Bod Rap Pod, if you enjoy our argument, which has a do the right thing kind of thing today, because we're all hella hot and shit.
It is like, quite warm today. Brought out the grammar Nazi in me.
Exactly. Ficky, ficky.
No, but I totally thought the same thing from the discussion of how the talk was going.
Yeah,
by the way.
But y'all both was wrong. Maybe I make money off of words sometimes. So this has been a very interesting episode. I believe that this is the second hottest episode since the infamous Ant interview.
Yes.
In the old game room, where it's about 174. But we're coping with it. Nate's got his shirt open, chest hairs are flowing.
Rocking well.
Yeah, exactly. Sweating the technique, literally.
Nice.
We are the Dad Bod Rap Pod. You can check us out or interact with us on social media at Dad Bod Rap Pod on Twitter. Suggest some overrated, underrated folks for us to review. Suggest maybe records that we should listen to, which are not yours. On IG, we are at Dad Bod Rap Pod.
Before we go, I want to give a shout out to Deuce Ellis and Camouflage Monk, whose beats we're using for this week's show. Like, I got serviced these from someone they work with, and I think these beats are fucking dope. This is my favorite beat thing that's come out in quite a while.
The batch that you got?
Yeah, I'm super into this week's beats and, like, appreciate them. Thank you, Jordan, for letting us use them. And, like, it's cool. Like, it's hard to be moved by an instrumental thing these days. And I was like, these are sick, dude. Like, okay. I was just like, this is, like, exactly – what we're looking for. They're better than podcast music, but they also make good podcast music.
There you
basically
go.
What I'm trying to say.
There you go. So, and it's on Spotify, or was that a private link?
There's an EP version of it, but the full length will be out when you guys hear this tomorrow, the 29th.
Okay,
dope.
No, actually, I've been rocking with those beats as well. A good kind of take away from edible,
stony,
and kind of,
like, but still anchored in like a programming sensibility that I think is very well done.
And I like stony with percussion. Like, I like when we're pulling off beats with beats again. So these definitely fit that bill. Shout out to folks for sending us those. We've been getting a lot of beats lately, and if they make it through the Nate filter, maybe they make it on the show. Dave and I have no input, so please, at Nate J. LeBlanc. No. If you have issues of why you got John Blaze shit and he's not. we're out here on all the fly platforms that you get all your podcast content from. Number 27 music podcast.
In Norway.
But not number 27 in Norway. Number 27 music interview podcast in Norway. There's like 26 IKEA joints going up before us. That's not Norwegian.
It's like when you write an article, never read the comments. And when you make a podcast, never look at the chart data.
Yeah,
it can only hurt you.
I am buoyed by knowing we're top 50 in Norway. So shout out to Norway for fucking with us. We're trying to crack the top 200 in America. But we appreciate you guys for fucking with us on a weekly basis. Every Thursday, new episodes, more interviews, more arguing, more grammatical Nazism. It is the Dad Bod Rap Pod.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.